Hello?
Hey, I'm going to make pancakes. Where's the pan?
It's in the cabinet next to the stove.
Gotcha. Where's the cakes?
Just be careful and don't burn down the house.
Okay, bye.
Hello?
I burned down the house.
What?
The fireman said, technically speaking, I didn't burn it down. The fire did. But apparently, I'm responsible.
What happened?
I used an accelerant, he said.
What?
You know that salad dressing in that big red plastic jug next to the lawnmower?
That's gasoline.
Well, it looks like a lawnmower. Anyway, I used that on the pancakes.
You don't put salad dressing in pancakes.
Wah, wah.
And then it burned down the house?
Wah, wah.
Stop that.
It didn't burn down the whole house. Just your half of everything. Like, my half of the kitchen seems fine.
I hope you're joking.
I'm joking about the pancakes, but not the fire. I don't care much for pancakes.
This is awful.
I'm joking about the fire, too. I just want you to realize how valuable I am to this household.
That was a terrible joke. Not funny. And it's not your house. I'm just letting you stay there.
And for that, I am not nearly grateful enough.
Well, I'm relieved nothing is wrong.
Plenty is wrong. Just not stuff I told you. I can't get any of the toilets to work unless they're in the bathroom. Then they leak a bit.
What?
Yeah, when I bring the toilet into another room, it suddenly stops working. Might be your sewage router isn't strong enough.
They don't work that way.
I feel like I need a whole instruction book just to use this darn house. Also, the air mattress wasn't inflating right because it was stuffed with foam.
I don't have an air mattress.
I never said I was Martha Stewart. Except that one time when her mom called. But she figured it out when I couldn't remember the color buff. Kept calling it tan.
Man, I try to be patient.
And I be trying a man's patience. Very similar, you and I. It's like we're peeing in a pod.
I don't think it's working out you living with me.
I don't mean to get serious, but I have nowhere to go. I have no money or a place to stay or a job.
I know. I'm sorry. It's just frustrating.
This whole thing is a metaphor for people living together in a community or on Earth, for that matter. We are here. We are together. We can kill each other or live together.
It looks like we do a little of both.
In my defense, my plan to kill you didn't work.
Thanks a lot.
I think I secretly deep down sabotaged it because my heart wasn't in it.
Again, thanks.
I don't want you dead. But it would be cool if we could both live here but in different dimensions, so that the only inkling we'd have of the other's presence are vague shadows and strange humming sounds.
When I get home, I think we need to strengthen our bonds.
Okay.
I mean, we need to remind each other what we value about each other.
Oh, I feel better that you forgot too. I could not, for the life of me, remember why I liked you. It was driving me crazy. First thing I thought was Frank Sutton, because I was also trying to remember the name of the actor who played Sergeant Carter on... Damn, what was it?
Gomer Pyle.
Gomer Pyle! That's why I like you!
You and I need to get away on a trip. Somewhere we can rediscover each other.
That's kind of weird talk. But I think by rediscover you mean have fun sightseeing.
Well, you're my friend, and I love you.
You only love me because I love you.
Well, I love you even...
If I didn't love you at all... Would you love me?
Sort of. In theory, I guess.
And if you didn't love me, I might not love you.
I can see that.
So who loved first? Someone must have loved without the other one loving back. Or else it was simultaneous. Or a paradox.
So our friendship is a paradox.
It sprang up fully formed. But I recall not liking you at first. Took me years to warm up to you.
Really? But I thought we were friends... the whole time.
So maybe you were loving me, thinking I was loving back, when I wasn't, and you're deluded.
But eventually you came around, so I'm glad I did.
But what if I never had? Was it worth the risk? Do you think if you love me, I owe it to you to love you back?
Well, I guess not.
I did, by the way. I liked you immediately. But again, I think I rushed to judgment.
It's all very confusing.
What is? Pancakes? Portable toilets?
No, love and friendship.
You know what a lean-to is?
Yeah, like a hut.
Is it better than a mansion?
Well, no.
Is it better than nothing?
Yes.
Well, sometimes our relationships are like lean-tos. They might not be mansions, but at least they keep us dry.
Our friendship is like an old duplex with half rented out to a really loud family.
Our love is like student housing.
Or a fairly nice hotel. But the AC broke and it smells like mildew.
That's so Florida!
That was a good time spinoff, wasn't it?
You're thinking of James at 47.
I miss the days of our youth when things were simpler, when we only worried about things like, is JJ going to be shot in the hallway of his housing project?
We knew less. Our world is larger now. Because its metabolism is slowing. Now each donut adds like 5,000 square miles.
My world is now a gas giant. It's bigger, but more nebulous.
Maybe my world has shrunk because I know more about it. But it's denser because I also know there's so much more to know than what I know. And also, matter and energy and quantum zoom zoom bitterschern.
What are you saying?
Who knows? Maybe if we lived forever, we would learn enough to make one true statement.
Can you make a true statement?
No.
But there, you just did.
All true statements contain paradoxes.
Is that right?
No. Listen, I really want to cook for you tonight.
I'm worried about you using the stove.
Don't worry. I dragged it outside so I can't burn anything down.
What? It's a gas stove. What about the gas line?
That thing behind the stove?
Yes.
You mean Hissy, the copper snake? He shoots flames if you try to feed him matches.
You're going to blow up the house.
Well, the best way to ensure that doesn't happen is for me to try and blow it up. I have a bad track record for completing projects.
Are you my friend?
What's that mean?
Are you my friend?
I think we went through this. I said yes. How often are you going to ask? All this reassuring. What is it you are really asking?
Am I my own friend?
I don't know, man. You should be. And friendship means hearing the truth and still loving the messenger, not just being a yes man. So, tough love yourself.
Good advice.
I'm good for something, right?
Absolutely. Sorry I doubted you. I love you, my friend.
Really?
Absolutely.
Unconditionally?
Sure.
Good. I wasn't kidding about burning down the house. Bye.
What? Hello? Hello? Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Wide. I'm Hardy Wide. Join me now, won't you, as we get together for a little time at a mythical cafe where we sit at this table and we spend an entire hour trying to get the waiter's attention. But during that time, we learn something about ourselves. And how desperately we need coffee. Oh, when will this wait end? I'm just glad to be doing it with you and have somebody to wait with. Oh, my friends, what a joy it is to be with you.
Excuse me, Hardy.
Hey, Mr. B, what's up?
I need your advice. I want to become a world-class athlete.
Well, that's quite a goal.
Yes, I think so. I was inspired overhearing someone at a restaurant say that that was their goal.
Okay.
Anyway, I wonder if you could give me advice on how to achieve that.
The most obvious thing is that you seem to be a little overweight.
Yes, that's true. I have an eating issue.
And what is that?
I've been eating about a dozen donuts every hour or so.
That's crazy. You must be gaining a lot of weight.
I am. I've gained so much, I've had to get a scale with scientific notation.
Now that sounds like a joke.
It is. The scale I've been getting weighed on is actually a small triple beam that I won off of Mrs. Miller at a cribbage game. She used it for her cocaine business. But it's so small, I have to shrink down to get on it, so I'm not sure how accurate it is.
It seems to me, before we even start talking about how to be an athlete, we need to take care of this binge eating.
True. It seems like a metaphor for creating love in the world. First, we have to deal with the hate, get each other not to hate.
Well, that's very good.
I'm my best when I'm with you, Hardy. In fact, I feel fine when we talk together, but when you're not around, I get depressed again.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You say such positive things to me, but when I'm alone, I have a voice in my head that says, "You're a failure."
Oh, you're not a failure.
No, I think it's talking about you. I kid. No, it says, "You're a failure. You're a loser." Is that God?
No, I don't think so. I think God only says things like, "Run for president" or "Win a Grammy." I think that's your voice.
But why would I say such a thing to myself? I don't want to feel bad.
I think that we are problem-solving creatures. And when we feel bad, we look for a reason.
I felt bad when I failed out of school.
So now you think that whenever you feel bad, it must be because of failure. but maybe you're wrong. Maybe it's a bad potato you ate.
That could very well be. Some rotten potatoes masquerade as donuts for protection.
You feel bad, and so you go looking for reasons. You need to not speak to yourself sometimes.
Like my grandparents would just sit in silence because they said arguing had become futile.
There you go.
Maybe I should speak to myself in a language I don't understand.
Try Chinese.
I don't know any.
How about this? Ni hao ma. It means how are you?
Well, now I know what it means, though, so I might answer, I am a failure.
Okay, do you speak French?
No.
Okay, so when you feel badly, say this. Allez venez, milord. Vous asseoir à ma table. Il fait c'est froid, or ici c'est comfortable.
Oh, I like that. Sort of a mantra. I will chant that all the way to the World Athlete Finals.
Well, there's no such thing, but you do that.
I'm going to stop hating myself, and then others. Then I'm going to love myself, and then others.
That's a good plan.
Then I'm going to be number one karate champion in the world.
Well, that's a little lofty.
In the U.S.
Still, maybe a little high.
In this room.
I think I could take you.
Well, get back to me in a year and see, mister.
Fair enough. You take care. I'm glad I can help.
Hearty, old boy, do you have a minute?
Hey, Hans, I was just about to start the show.
Then I'm not interrupting anything important. Good.
Well, what is it?
I'm depressed.
Oh, no, why?
No one remembers me.
Of course they do.
No, they don't. They have forgotten all about me, all of my accomplishments, all of my hard work. And now that has faded like red velvet drapes in a sunny house of prostitution.
Well, that's not true.
My brothel drapes are pink, Hearty.
Well, I don't follow you.
No one remembers my past work. The praise isn't there anymore. Nothing I do endures. It's all about what have you done lately.
Well, memories do fade. Just do more, I guess.
But there's something that has put rather a crimp in my career.
What is that?
I'm dead, you idiot. I can't find work because I've been dead for years.
I can see that.
You feel me, boy?
I do, but you've contributed so much, and there are still people who remember and love your work and to whom you give joy.
Really?
Yes, you just don't hear from them.
My Uncle Tanous on the Danny Thomas show was a triumph.
True.
I do Lebanese very well.
I agree.
But I feel like my performances are messages in bottles set adrift at sea, destined to reach those I have never met and will never see.
Well, we don't really ever know who we reach, who we affect. I know people are listening to my show, even though most don't ever tell me.
In your case, who knows? It's better that you don't know.
Well, maybe that's true.
Do you do it for the praise, the recognition, the fame?
Obviously not. And you were and still are famous. Very well known. Your work is still popular. Maybe not the stuff on Danny Thomas, but people recognize your voice, and those you've touched may never be able to thank you.
So how do I know?
You don't. You forge ahead. You do what you need to do and know that what we contribute to the food bank of helping our fellow man or lifting our spirits doesn't always have our name on it.
I understand. I don't credit you, but I do understand.
Okay, then. You go back to wherever you were and keep on being the best hands there is. Keep making sandcastles and chalk drawings on the sidewalk and embrace impermanence.
Well, now you're just confusing me, but I'll hold on to the part about Uncle Tanous being pure genius.
Well, good.
Now you can get back to your little show.
All right. Hope I've helped.
Hey, Hardy.
Hey, Stinky. What's up?
I need to borrow your show for a minute.
Well, I was just getting ready to use it.
It'll only take a minute. It's an emergency.
Oh, okay, I guess.
Hello, everyone. Now I have 5 roosters that I need to get rid of. I want $5 apiece, or I'll take a jet ski and trade.
Well, hold on a minute. What are you doing?
Trying to get rid of these damn roosters.
But that's not what this show is for. It's not a swap meet.
Look. Just because you use your pickup truck to drive around doing insurance estimates doesn't mean I can't use it to haul a couch.
Well, that is unassailable logic.
You're darned right it is. I have a math PhD.
And what's that, Stinky?
A PhD in math. a doctor of philosophy and mathematics.
Oh, I thought it stood for something else.
Because I'm too stupid to have an advanced degree, is that it?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Stereotypes are foolish. I once ate a red frog because someone said the blue ones are poisonous. Guess what? So are the red ones. What I'm saying is there's more to a person than you think. And foolish people can know a lot of facts, and smart people can make a lot of mistakes.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
Also, it's not clear what your show is about anyway. Is it a talk show? Is it theater? Is it rambling nonsense?
I honestly don't know.
It depends, doesn't it?
I guess it depends on what I need it to be or what others need it to be.
It lacks consistency.
Is that bad?
Not necessarily. But if I tell my friend to try out a new donut shop, and it turns out that when he goes there it's a nail salon, that's not helpful.
Oh, does that happen? Do you tell people to listen to my show and then that week I do something weird?
I'm going to come out and say it. Yes. And it often makes me look stupid.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In metaphysics, we call it the dojo problem.
Oh, well, that sounds interesting. What is that?
Well, at a dojo, you teach karate. The first day, you teach the basics. And then each class, you teach more as the students get better.
That makes sense.
But after a while, you start to get new students. And they don't know the basics. But the rest of the students are all ready for the advanced stuff. What do you teach?
Well, I guess you break them up into groups, maybe.
But there's only one teacher. Maybe you keep starting over.
But then the advanced students don't learn. And in reality, that doesn't seem to be a problem.
Because in reality, the teacher makes the students teach each other. Eventually, the master only teaches the advanced students, and the rest trickles down.
How does this have anything to do with my show?
It may not. What's on tap for this week?
Well, I set out to maybe try and comfort hearts. Lots of people are going through rough times, and sometimes the radio is great company. Instead of getting them madder or sadder or more fearful, I thought I'd try some joy.
That works, does it?
I think so.
You know what I think it is?
What?
I think your job is to create a diversion. Something evil is trying to get people's attention, and your job is to distract them from the distraction.
Oh, you lost me.
Godzilla is walking down a street.
Okay.
There's screaming people everywhere. They stand stunned and fearful in the middle of the street as Godzilla, the awesome terror, larger than life, bears down on them. They cannot move. They are paralyzed by the insurmountable danger of the great mutant lizard.
Wow.
Your job is to stand in the alley dressed as a clown, jumping up and down and saying, "Look at me!" so they can break the spell long enough to run.
Holy cow, really?
I think so.
Well, that's a lot easier than I thought. I thought I had to have answers.
Answers? You?
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw up or choke. Listen, let me know if there are any bites on those roosters. I'm willing to drop the price a bit since I already signed a contract on a new condo and I need the down payment. Oh, did I tell you I got a pig named Escrow?
No, but listen, if you just excuse me, and thanks, Stinky. You really helped.
Hey, that's why you made me.
Indeed. Indeed. I have two favorite kinds of crazy people. One is the kind of crazy person that dresses up like a king or a pope or something and stands in the middle of the street holding a sign that says, "Love one another." Kind of crazy person that thinks that they have been put on the earth to save the entire world. That if they didn't exist, there would be no one to lead mankind to love and peace. Those are great. Do they have any effect? No. My other favorite kind of crazy person is the person who lives a life that does change the world, that touches lots of people, but that goes home every night and cries because they think they're insignificant and nothing. Does that work? No. I love it. And you think I'm going to say the truth is somewhere in the middle. But boy, I hate things that are somewhere in the middle. I hate compromise or wishy-washiness. I love when extremes exist together. I just want to take those two crazy people and mush them together into a two-headed crazy person so that they're like the two-headed dinosaur on Dragon Tales. Now, if you're 10, you remember that from your youth. If you're 60, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But there was a cartoon, and there's a two-headed dragon. It was like Siamese twins. It was like Chan and Aang, except that they were not Carolina gentlemen. It's a dinosaur. And it's a male and female Siamese twin dinosaur, which I believe is genetically impossible. But so are talking dinosaurs. So I guess once that cat is out of the bag, forget it. The cat is definitely out of the bag, unless the cat needs some sort of umbilical connecting to the bag, because the bag is the source of life. So the cat just runs along, dragging the bag behind him from this fleshy cord that comes out of his belly. Now, you say, that doesn't help me at all, Hardy. Oh, aren't you here to help me? I don't know. I just got a call to come to your house, and really it wasn't clear what the problem was. Probably because I got the call from a bunch of people at once. Now, I would never want to give you something watered down. Oh, if you're going to give something to the whole world, you have to make it average, right? Because you don't know what people's tastes are. Some people are super tasters, and just a tiny little bit of spice or a tiny little bit of flavor to them is overwhelming and seems too much. Do you have something bland for me, Hardy? Do you have some mac and cheese? Other people's tongues are destroyed by years of cigar smoking. And they say, I need some spicy jalapeno or something, one of those peppers or what. I need something incredibly flavorful. I want you to take a whole jar of Montreal steak spice and just dump it in. Oh, that's too much. Coriander or something. No, not for them. So now how do you make a one-size-fits-all? Do you ever see something that says one-size-fits-all and you think, I can think of a dozen people now that this would not fit, especially if it's a hat, and I know that I'm on the small end. I have a very tiny head. I've been discouraged many times by going hat shopping and saying, oh, I guess another size smaller? And this goes on until they say, perhaps you would like to go next door to our sister store, Haberdasher Jr., or something like that. Haberdasher Kids. And, well, why is the K backwards? Because it was written by a child. The entire sign, the whole marketing campaign was all done by children. We hired them. We thought, who knows children better than children? Well, that's wrong, see, because who knows children better than elderly Dr. Spock or something? So an older pediatrician probably would be your answers. Barry Basilton or Barry Baslesworth. Do you remember him? So hello, little baby. Do you remember him? There was a pediatrician on TV. And he'd say, hi, hello, baby. He had a little voice that was so calming. And I'd say, I know he's talking to a baby, but I want Dr. Basilton to talk to me like that. So look in my eye, say, hello, I recognize you, child. I recognize you're welcome to this earth. Oh, I heard that voice, and I longed for something that kind. We all want to stare into a face that says, welcome to this earth. You're expected here. You belong here. You may feel as if you don't, but you do. When you go to a new, I know when I go to an Asian country and I go to a new monastery, a lot of times you feel like, oh, a lot of the other brother monks have been here longer and all. And it's so wonderful when the abbot comes up to you and says, oh, we're so glad to have you. I'm so glad you are precious and you belong here too. We want you to, even though you can't do any of the meditation right, even though you don't know our martial art, even though your size, everything's all wrong about you, but oh, you belong. And the abbot only has to tell me that once. And then I know that, okay, I deserve to be here too. Oh, we're all looking for that face that greets us on earth and says to us, y'all belong here too. Don't worry about what's going to happen. Lots of strange things are going to go on. You might get hurt. You might get sick. Others might mock you. You might feel bad. You might feel fear. But you know what? Dr. Barry greeted you when you came. You know everything's all right. Because he smiled and he had nothing but kindness. So you know somewhere you belong and you should be here. Oh, look at yourself in the mirror. Oh, you oddly shaped thing. You strange creature. If you're a young person and you're looking in the mirror and you're going, man, that is one sexy animal. Come back in a couple decades and look at it again and go, oh, dear Lord, what has time done? Oh, it's done some wonderful sculpting. Look at what time has done. It's given character. It's given a patina. I went one time to the antique show, and these two twins came out. And I said, hi, Leslie and Lauren, whatever their names are. I can't remember. I get the antique twins mixed up with the ones who did Ring of Fire, the Blairs. So I know they're different people. But one of them is more interested in chairs, and the other, perhaps, in volcanoes. But they looked at me, I said, how much am I worth? And they said, well, you were worth a great deal more until you tried to take that patina off. What'd you use, Botox or something? I thought the wrinkles were, and they, no, the wrinkles add character. Don't try to hide all that. There's no replacing that. We can't take a... Now, you've heard of faux weathering? You take a new stool, and you take a stool, not like a duty. I mean a footstool or something like that. Come on. Get your head out of the toilet, unless you're vomiting. And then keep it on in there. I'll just speak louder so you can hear me. Rough night last night, huh? Thanks for tuning in, though. Love you. They take a new stool and they hit it with chains and they throw things at it and dirt, try to make it look like it's aged. But there's no replacement for really aging. There's no replacement for taking that chair and having it go through generations and the hands touching the railings on it and rubbing it, getting the oils from the hands on it and having the wood change character over time and look at it. There's no faking it. You've seen these movies where they try to take a young person, they say, they put old person makeup on him. I'm now an elderly time lord. You go, no, you're not, man. You're Matt Smith with a bunch of foam on your face. It just looks like that. It doesn't look natural. You've been faux weathered. They never look real. There's no elderly person. This started, I think, Little Big Man with Dustin Hoffman. Now, Dustin Hoffman could play it without makeup, even. See, because his old face is all weathered, it's lived in. It looks beautiful. It looks beautiful. I see elderly people. I saw my grandmother lay dying at age 80-something. She looked older than she was because she'd been so sick. And, oh, her face. I saw pictures of her when she was young. You know, little child's face. Now, look at her hair. It's gray. Couldn't be whiter and thinner. And look at her face. The skin is so thin, you can see her bones, you can see the veins, you see every mark on her face. These are last moments on earth. Look at that beautiful body. What it's saying, this book is almost complete. It's like, there's the last page of the book. This is gorgeous. I didn't know it was going to be like this. Oh, I tell you what, look in that mirror and love what's ever in there. I know we all got room for improvement. Maybe you're overweight or underweight. Maybe you got to do something about yourself for health reasons just so you can feel better, you know? But boy, whatever appearance you get to be as a creature on this earth is exquisite, I think. Look at animals. Look at the old elderly dog-looking dog. Oh, it's all broken in finally. Old shoe, weathered old shoe, it's finally broken in. So I just embrace all the elderly. Oh, embrace all those who've been through something. Embrace all those that have been battered around, look like something happened to it. Like I said, they fake it. They want you to sell you a leather jacket that's looked like it's been through World War II. They want to sell you a steamer trunk that looks like it's been across the Atlantic on a sea voyage. They want to sell you all these things. But there's no replacing that experience. And the ones that beat you up are just as valuable. Oh, survive. You might Listen, I got news for you. All those, I know your heart's down right now, maybe. Or very, very up. Could be. Don't know who I'm talking to. Let's say it's down, you're weary of life. I'm going to make a deal with me. Make a deal with me. Hang in there another 30 years. And then go. Because who knows what's going to happen, A. And B, you already got reservations. We're all flying out of here. Nobody stays here. We're all leaving. Don't leave now. Did you ever say something at a party? This happens at a party all the time. There's something I call party suicide. Somebody be at a party or a group, and somebody offends them, and they start to have a bad time, and they leave. They just leave. You go, where's Tom? And go, oh, he took off. He's all upset because there wasn't any more lime sherbet in the non-alcoholic punch. I said, really, he left? Yeah, he didn't say nothing to anybody. Just took off. But we're fixing to watch Fractured Funnies with Hans Conried and everything. He loves that. Why'd he leave? He just didn't know. Man, don't leave the party. Party is going to end. You all get kicked out at the end. Just stay. There's somebody that'll come and say, come on, just sit with me. For God's sake, don't be like that. Oh, bless you. I know it's a weird party. I didn't invite everybody. I don't even know how everybody got here. I don't even know who the host is. Do you know who the host is? Because I don't know. And yes, I'm feeling awkward. And yes, I look around and I think, oh, I don't want to talk to everybody because I have to explain myself. What is it that you do? I stand on a street corner dressed as a king. And I hold a sign that says, everybody love one another. And then they all laugh at me. Why do you have such an inflated idea of who you are? Why do you think you've made some kind of noble purpose for your life that doesn't exist? You are deluded. You think you're greater than you are. And I say, I do what I got to do to survive, man. Because if you were me, maybe you would have given up. If all I have to do is put on a funny hat and pretend everything's okay, I'm going to do it. So don't begrudge people their reason. Don't begrudge people to come up with some fantastical, imaginary purpose for giving themselves a secret mission to make life more interesting so they don't feel like I'm just another leaf on another tree. I'm just another ant in a pile of nameless, indistinguishable insects dying and regenerating, our names never etched in history, all forgotten and pointless. What do I care of the grand exploits of ants over time when I, a solitary insect, must suffer and die? Therefore, I'm going to pretend I'm a princess. And everything's okay. And Dr. Barry loves me. And everything's going to be all right. Because someday I'm going to manifest into my final form, which is the grand night of loving one another. A grand night of loving one another. Dude, that's probably, I'm not going to advertise that because who knows what kind of people show up. Say, I'm here for the orgy. And I assumed it was a medieval theme because of the way you spelled night. Sam, I apologize so much for that. We will be having a medieval orgy. That's next week. Right now, we're going to be... What has happened to my speech? What happens when that happens? I wonder. When you're thinking and you're talking and your mouth starts... It happens to me a lot because on radio, we're very self-conscious. And you'll see announcers do that. They'll go, yes, today there was a panda boar... In the zoo, and you go, oh, I just said boar. Should I correct myself or keep going? I think they know I meant panda bear because there is no such thing as a panda boar. So maybe I should just keep going. Or maybe I should say, oh, excuse me, I meant panda bear. Like that, which seems awkward. Or the worst thing you can do, and this is a novice broadcaster thing, is when you go, and you draw such incredible attention to your misspeaking that people just, you lose people completely. And they go, man, this guy's floundering. I don't know. I bet he's lost his train of thought. I bet he doesn't even know. I bet he can think back as far as Panda Boar, but no farther. And you might be right. You might be right. And when I do that, that's why I keep a little card in my pocket. And I pull it out. And it says, first of all, it's a ticket for High Holy Days for Bethel. But on the back of that, say a ticket, you need a ticket for High Holy Days? Sometimes you do. It gets awfully packed. And so on the back of the ticket, I had written, a little parable. And it said, you are but dust and ashes, and the world was created for your sake. And I read that you're supposed to keep those two thoughts in your pocket. I thought maybe it was I was supposed to keep them in my head. But I say, no, keep them in your pocket. I say, why is that? Because you just want to forget about that. Otherwise, you'll get confused. A lot of our wisdom comes in the form of things that contradict, doesn't it? Say, yes, here's a Pop-Tart, but on top of the Pop-Tart is tapenade. Oh, what kind of Pop-Tart is it? Cinnamon Pop-Tart, black olive tapenade. You must keep those two conflicting thoughts in your head. They are both true. But why must I keep them together? Well, put them together and then put them in the freezer so that you don't have to see it. That's what I do. That's what I do. I take those ideas that I think are essentially a paradox, and I say, I'm just going to live with the paradox like it's my grandmother's corpse, and I just couldn't bring her to the funeral home. She's died in bed, and weirdly, there was never any decomposition. She just instantly mummified. Man, that dehumidifier, it's not even a proper dehumidifier. It's just a plastic cup, it looks like. Like a cup of soup cup, and there's some sort of super absorbent silicone in there or something, and it pulls all the moisture out of the room and your grandmother in this cup. You just empty the water out of the cup every once in a while, and that's something. And it can, apparently it will desiccate the moistest corpse into a beautiful, beautifully cured mummy, air-cured mummy. And as you see, you still feel like you're talking about beef jerky or something. No, this is human remains. Oh, they cure, and usually you need a dry environment or so wet that there's no oxygen. If an anaerobic environment, like a bog. See, and that's my uncle's room is more like that. So my grandmother's room, very dry, beautiful, desiccated, dry mummy. My uncle's room, humid and loaded with peat. I don't know how the peat got in there, but he mummified. He's all leathery and dark, and he's also not dead, which is interesting. He's still getting up every day and going to his job at Campbell's Soup. God bless him. But eventually, I assume he will one day not get up, just as we all do. Now, why are mummies so important? I've heard you mention mummies before. Who says that? Who said that? I did. You should really use a different voice when you're speaking to yourself. I'm sorry, I know.
Why do you talk about mummies so much?
Thank you, man. I didn't even see you, Lou.
I'm always here. I'm always behind you.
Thanks. You're feeding me lines. That's important. Well, why do I talk about mummies so much? Why am I so fascinated? I'm fascinated with all sorts of remains. I'm fascinated also with fossils. All sorts of fossils. All sorts of remains of things that used to live. Oh, life is something that's been moving through something else. And all you see is what's left. You know, we experience time so slowly that our brief sojourn on Earth seems like it takes a while. But it's as brief as the life of a bacteria or something. We flick on and flick off. And there's very little evidence that we've ever lived. Sometimes our remains will last for a while. But even fossils aren't eternal. Everything in the universe must be destroyed. Over and over again. Everything that is in us is something colossal that was destroyed in a violent manner. And we have hear that from physicists all the time. Everything that's in you comes from exploding stars. It does. All the elements that were
originally formed at the beginning of the universe because of exploding stars and everything coming together. That's all the stuff that's in us. It's the same stuff, and it's going to get destroyed again and go back out. Now, what happens then, I do not know. Does it reform itself as something else? If my memories aren't there, is it really part of me? If I've got a mummy of a man, is that the man? See, when we got a mummy or something like that, or we have remains, or we have a dinosaur, we imagine what it was like. But we will never imagine the real person or the real dinosaur. What we're doing is we're putting a story on it. We're putting ourselves in that remains, because that's all we have is story. And we realize that what life really is an elaborate story. And we exist not really in the material world, but in the story world. Do you understand? Otherwise, this place makes no sense. We've made sense of it. The sense we've made is not necessarily real. It is a sense. It has internal logic. But it doesn't apply to the rest of the universe necessarily. They're not interested in our story. They're not interested in our kings and queens. They're not interested in our dragons. They're not interested in our drama. But we are. And it's beautiful because we are the story people, man. Oh, and there we have a little touch of eternity available to us. I can speak to all sorts of people. I was speaking, all my friends came by in the beginning of the show. You saw that. And they needed me, and I tried to help them out. But did you see how they all, a lot of them turned it around and made it about helping me? How's that possible? Oh, do we help ourselves when we help others? Now, you hear me on the radio, and I shouldn't be this self-conscious about it and anything. I should just speak to you. I shouldn't be always analyzing like I do. But I often think, I wonder what people are thinking about who I am. I wonder who that Hardy is, really. I wonder who he really is. I wonder what I'm really listening to. I wonder what he thinks about it. I wonder if he's self-satisfied or something. So he's got a show on the radio. I bet he's pretty proud of that. I bet he's really pretty obnoxious guy like that. Or maybe say, oh, I bet that Hardy, you know, people think all sorts of things about you when they hear you speaking to others. Make all sorts of assumptions. They make up stories. Are any of the stories really about me? I don't know. You make up assumptions who Hardy might know, who he might be, the degree of joy or pain in my life. Are areas for speculation. And we wonder. And we assume. And we make up stories. Now you do it so well and so consistent, and every day you think that you would save the best part for yourself. But this is not the case. I find that people are making up stories and they're not putting themselves in a good part. That's like running for election, student council, not voting for yourself. Why would you do that? It's like writing a play and not making yourself a good character. When Orson Welles did the movie version of Franz Kafka's The Trial, he put himself in it, but not as the lead. That wasn't his favorite part. He didn't think he'd be very good. I made himself the lawyer. And he was good at that part. And he liked it. But see, he wrote a good part for himself. He's in it. He's not going to say, oh, no, old Orson can't do that. And you say, well, Orson was so full of himself. Orson was so, at Orson Welles, he thought he was so great. Couldn't even, and a lot of all you know is to make fun of him from reading an ad for frozen peas or something like that. But I'll tell you what, he's a complicated man. And he did have self-doubt. And he did have an enormous amount of confidence mixed with modesty and mixed with doubt. And he just made himself larger in life and did it anyway. Oh, yeah. He said, well, he was a genius. Oh, he became a genius by declaring himself a genius. And you may be wrong. But I tell you what, whatever you got to do, to make your life seem important. You need to do that because it is important. It really is. I know that. Why is it important? Because it's unimportant. What do you mean? It's so unimportant, it's important. What do you mean? I mean Pop-Tart and Tapenade. That's what I mean. I'm so sorry. I mean Pop-Tart and Tapenade. So what are you going to pick?
I like, it depends whether you like sweet or savory.
I've made a terrible comparison. I like both those things.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to have to sit back and think of something else. I should have said marzipan. I should have said marzipan. Oh, I'm so glad to be with you.
I tell you what, I feel more myself. I feel freer with you, and I don't even know you, than I do with people I have to look at, because they're looking right at me, and I don't know what to say or do. I'm afraid to confess my real feelings, my real fears, or my real confidence. Sometimes I'm afraid to feel good about myself, because I don't want someone else to feel bad. Did you ever do that? A lot of people say that. You see that on social media. Say, I'm tired of hearing about people's happy families.
Well, gee, I don't know. And then, I'm tired of people being depressed and not counting their blessings.
All right.
I'm tired. A lot of you are tired, I see. I think you're tired of just hearing from other people. Everybody's tired. I'm tired of that.
Oh, my goodness. I'm surprised we're not all fast asleep, how tired we are of everything. You know?
Tired. I'm tired of all this murder. I'm tired of global injustice. Just please.
I don't know. We get tired of things. What do we do about them? Sometimes I just want to complain. I'm not mad at you. Oh, just get it off your complain. It's okay. It's crazy. So some people don't complain enough. Feel as if they do not have anything worth complaining about. Say, well, I hate to complain since, you know, I'm a guard at the prison and the prisoners have it worse. But, you know, I'm getting a little tired of being punched in the back of the head. That's okay. Hey, you can complain. That's all right. I'll listen to you. Oh, sometimes we take each other too seriously, don't we? Oh, my goodness. Did you ever see one of those exchanges online? Someone make a comment, someone post a YouTube video, and then somebody will comment, your big piece of duty, also your religion, shut up. And then people will answer and say, you don't know, like that. Why would you even answer? I don't understand. There's an absurdity of this accusation when people get right into it. They want to somehow make sure the world doesn't believe these things. Somehow set everything straight. You're believing all the wrong things about me. I need to correct everything that's wrong that's believed about me. I don't. I no longer do. I did when I was young. I don't now. It's not my job to correct all the things that people assume about me. It's not my job to make people like me who don't know me. It's not my job. I can't do that. I don't even know what's true about myself. Why would I want to confront you about it? The other day I was pulling out of a parking lot, and instead of pulling out of the space, there's nobody in front of me, I went forward. So I went forward that way, right? And as I'm coming, this lady's coming around in a truck trying to park sort of in the space next to it. So I kind of cut her off and everything. And she looked really mad. Really mad that I'd done something that stupid. And I was like, man, she's getting mad at me. I don't like this. And I rolled my window down. And I yelled out of the window. I said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was dumb. I'm so sorry. And the expression on her face changed instantly to forgiveness. Because she realized, hey, I made mistakes too. I see that. This poor dum-dum, he didn't see me coming. But I tell you, a lot of times I would have yelled at her for yelling at me, right? But I got to understand that she doesn't know Hardy. How dare she yell at Hardy? She doesn't know I helped somebody the other day. She doesn't know who I am. I'm just another idiot. I understand that. I understand that. And so I said, I'm sorry, because it doesn't affect me. It doesn't make me, it doesn't diminish me. By saying I'm sorry, I did something stupid. I do stupid things all the time. I have to apologize for them. I know that. And I tell you, when you do anything, you put yourself out there artistically or anything, people say, oh, that, I liked that video, that one wasn't funny, I liked that show, that one wasn't funny, you did a good job there, that one wasn't good. You just got to accept that. And also, a lot of the times, you're saying exactly what I would say to myself. Exactly. And boy, it's hard to accept the truth, but there it is. There it is. And I'm glad I accept the truth, because if I didn't accept the truth, I might not witness a sunset. I have no say into how the sun sets or the colors of the sky. I have no say about what goes into a forest. I know that its makeup is perfect, and I'm looking at it and it's beautiful, but I have no say. I have no say into what an ocean looks like, into where the waves peak, into the colors that play upon the reflection. I have no say. I just appreciate it. And I know that it must be right, because just as a whole, it looks right to me. And it gives me a sense of awe and joy. So I'm not going to worry about trying to go around controlling everything. And you know this, I got a greeting card one time that said, Lord, help me to control what I can control and not control the other controlling things that I cannot and others that I let go. If it comes back to me, it was love. If it dies, it was a sick bird. Footsteps in the sand. That's what Einstein said that. And now I looked at that card and I said, I'm going to cut the back off the card and I'm going to Mod Podge it onto a cypress knee. And I did. I put that on my wall. I had to use lacquer eventually. Mod Podge wasn't doing it. Thickly lacquered. I have that on the wall now. And I looked to it for inspiration. Now, unfortunately, I flipped it around, so it's just the back of the card. I should have paid more attention. But I look at that and I think, not of the specific words, but of the fact that it was motivating me. And I remember the motivation, and that's enough. I can't remember the specifics. So my whole life has been like that. I remember the kindness and the joy and love, if not the specifics. I remember my friends. I don't remember exactly what they were saying. But I remember seeing their faces and loving it. I remember watching that TV and seeing Dr. Barry Brazelton and saying, ooh, I love the way he says, baby, baby, like that. That's all I remember. I don't know anything about the man. I'm sure he's maybe live, is gone. Don't know. Don't know. He's, oh, yeah, you know, he ended up doing something awful. No, I don't think that's true, but who knows? That's not what I'm taking away from it. All right? I don't know. I've looked at some beautiful things and thought, oh. You know, if you looked at a statue, say, oh, it's an amazing statue.
You know that's of a mass murderer.
I did not know that. It looked beautiful. Now that I know the details, it's different. Oh, my goodness. What are you trying to say, Hardy? I don't know. But I think I've said it. And I've said it in a bunch of ways. Why don't you try saying it in a different voice? I will. And it might go something like this. I have sometimes a tough time doing different voices and everything. I don't know why. I want to do a different voice. Like that, it doesn't ever sound anything. It's got to be a little subtler than that to do an impression. I've done impressions. Let's see if I can do an impression of somebody you don't know. Those are my favorite ones. As when people say, I always tell people to go, do an your best impression of a non-famous person. Like your teacher or someone like that. And I have one. I'm not going to say who the person is. I mean, there is an outside chance that he's listening. But I would just like to do my impression. And I'm not going to say the name of the man. I'm just going to say he's clergy. And he's a beautiful guy. And I love him, but I do an uncanny impression of him. And here he is. I'm not going to tell you what we are all gathered here today to understand that there is a circle of life. That's it. And if you knew this man, you'd realize, man, that is dead on. But you don't know who it is. You know, interesting. So you don't know I'm doing an impression. I think art is like that a lot, too. You say, oh, I just heard the greatest thing. What'd you heard? This guy's called Elvis Experience. I go, oh, is it Elvis impersonator? And you go, what now, what? I go, oh, yeah, that's a, he's doing an impersonation of a man named Elvis Presley. Oh. Well, I don't know about that, but I know Elvis' experience is something. This guy can, and nobody sings like that. I go, well, yeah, Elvis did. I go, well, nobody living. I go, well, other Elvis impersonators, really. Well, I don't know about that, but I know that he's good, and I like Elvis' experience. All right. Do we really need people to know the origin of things before they can really appreciate something? See this all the time with literature. Sir Hardy, what are your radio roots? What would I have to listen to appreciate you more? And I say, oh God, don't. You actually maybe appreciate me less. So, well, that's apparently he's a Elvis. Hardy is a sort of Elvis experience, isn't he? I don't know. Am I doing an impression? Somebody used to do it better? Could be. But it doesn't mean that you and I can't have a wonderful experience. I think it happens with music and art all the time. And I think eventually if we trace that line, we'd just keep going, wouldn't we? Just keep going. And we'd end up around a campfire with a bunch of cavemen and Hardy White caveman going, oh, boogie boogie. Boogie 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 boogie. Like that. I say, oh man, that all those voices are coming out of Hardy boogie boogie, right? And then that just goes on through time. And I say, first of all, you're thinking, how do I speak caveman? I'd just like to point out that I was not. Those are nonsense syllables that I was making up. You got to be that specific now. I hear a lot. After every show, I get at least one email from an academic going, and it's just usually one word. It'll say wrong like that. I don't know, man. You know, I don't have an advanced degree in everything. I just have a library, and I don't use it. But most of the things I just feel are intuitive. A lot of that, when I first heard about metaphysics and decision theory and all the time, I thought, this is, I don't need to read this. This is absolutely intuitive. I know all this, I think. Oh, bless you for being with me listening. I'm feeling really lonely. I don't want to say goodbye. I can't believe that the show is over. I don't know what to do after I shut this microphone off. It gets so lonely. I feel like we're connecting now, and then I'll be adrift by myself. Friends, I'm being honest. Boy, sometimes I only feel alive when I'm with other people. I feel only like I have a purpose when I'm with other people. And you give me such purpose by lending me your ear. You know, and you make me feel so important and so loved, and I can't thank you enough. You really are making my life better, and I hope I made yours just a little bit better. Oh, if we can bless each other like that, man, we got a good thing going. Don't tell anybody about it. They all want some. It's free. Oh, you've been listening to Miracle Nutrition. That's why. That's what. On WFMU East Orange. WMFU Mount Hope, WFMU.org, and 91.9 in Rockland County. Oh, friends, thank you so much for listening, and perhaps we'll be together again next week.
You are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in Rockland County at 91.9 FM, and online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned for Sinner's Crossroad.
I was standing. I was standing at the crossroad. And I'm
A special goes out to Miss Gaitre Pugh and Addis Robertson, and also my second mother, Mrs. William, on Stewart Street.
We will say again that the entire program goes out for all our listening friends, and all of you that, I'm going to tell you again, all of you that missed last Sunday afternoon program on Key Street, you missed a treat. You should have been there. So now we're going back to the control room, let you hear some music.
Whenever the saints of God get together, you can always have a good time. We used to go down to a little sanctified church. We lift our hands and praise his name. Whenever our burdens got heavy, I knew a song we used to love to sing. I know that I will wipe away all these tears from my eyes. He said he would wipe away all these tears from my eyes. I have a verse right here. Listen, church, people gonna talk about you as long as we live. They gonna criticize the service that we give, but you keep on working and Jesus will see you through. When you've done your best, that's all you can do. Sometimes you be up, then again you be down. Don't let nothing stop you from getting your starry crown. I know the Lord will wipe away all these tears from my eyes. I have another verse. God Almighty, look at your church. Sometimes I'm up, sometimes I'm down, but still my soul be heavenly bound. Jesus is my leader, I can't go wrong. Whenever I get weak, he better make me strong. I know the Lord will wipe away all of these tears from my eyes. Let me say this first and I'll be through. I know I'm saved, I know I'm sanctified, I know I got the Holy Ghost, and I'm fine baptized. When my work is over and I've seen my test, just want to lay my head on Jesus' breast.